cool is that, Mark? We are actually broadcasting live to YouTube. How do you like that? Technology is amazing. I should ask you if you're still with me. Mark?
There's a mute.
You're talking, but I can't hear you.
Man. Yeah, you're like, at least the video works. You're like, I know he's trying to speak. Something's wrong.
Mark's never that like, quiet about
it. I'm like, man, this is awesome. I'm on YouTube for the first time. No, you're not. You gotta
yeah. And essentially, I'm going to call that. And ladies and gentlemen, I just cut somewhere in. We have begun. As we just set up live, testing some new broadcasting software. For two reasons. One, I don't have my nice audio equipment, and two, because I'm in the wrong state, but two, because some news happened. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening.
I gotta activate my force field before we go into this, Stalker.
There you go. Okay. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Better than all. That's awesome, Mark. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Star Wars Report, episode 68, our special reaction episode. This isn't even really a coverage episode. This is a special reaction episode where we're going to talk about the news. You guys, if you listen to this podcast, you know what just happened. Walt Disney Company acquires Lucasfilm, announces 789.
Done. Done. Done.
I'm your host for this evening and this particular podcast episode, Riley Blanton. So glad that you've decided to tune into the Star Wars Report special coverage of this spectacular news. Certainly the most exciting news I've ever heard in my life as a Star Wars fan. We're going to get into it. We're going to get into the nitty gritty. Here joining me to help break it down is Mr. Mark Herleman.
Hey, everybody. That's right. And with me behind me back here, Whistler, the droid who likes to hose things up for me and occasionally.
I can see it, and actually right now, through the wonderful technology of Google Plus and Google Plus Hangouts, we are actually broadcasting this live and with video. So I can see Whistler. As a matter of fact, I think that's the first time I have seen Whistler, at least at the beginning of an episode like this.
This is true. Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's a really great time. I'm glad to actually be able to see. I love any time we do a recording, we've got our video working. I mean,
yes.
You know, for those of you who don't know, anytime we have a lot of people before, we're experimenting with new technology now, but before we couldn't do it unless we only had two people. Now we're able to do it with more people, but it kind of almost needs a dedicated computer to run it all, because every time we've done it, it's been staff meetings, and it's been really fun. It definitely enhances the interactions that we're having.
Yes, and so, and if we're going to do a video where we want to see each other, it's now. I mean, it's hard to convey, Mark, I'll be honest, it's hard to convey the actual level of enthusiasm that I have, because I'm still kind of in a state of shock. So before I break it all down, before I've actually referenced Club Jade, really has kudos. Club Jade, TheForce.net, those two especially have been the two fan sites I've really depended on to find the most comprehensive roundups and coverage of this huge announcement. So we're going to get into all that. We're going to break it down. But I just want to start, Mark, by asking you your story, because we have not communicated, period. No text, no chat, no nut. Here we are, Mark. We're talking new Star Wars movies. Where were you when you first heard the news? Because this is going to be one of those moments where you're wondering, where were you when they announced the next trilogy of Star Wars films?
Where were you when the world stopped turning on that October day?
Exactly.
Well, you know, you've heard of the State of the Union address, the State of the EU address. In this case, it's the State of the Paranoia address. I was flipping on Facebook, my app on my phone. I'm loving my smartphone. It's smarter than I. It allows me to interact with my fans and my friends in ways that were never available to me before. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at William Devereaux's post and I'm like, what is he on? Crack? it's confirmed episode 7 in 2015. What the, William, did somebody slip you something? I mean, because William is a great guy.
William, you are such a good
straight and narrow. I'm like, William is pulling my leg harder than anyone ever has, because this is just something you don't joke about, because everybody knows it ain't happening. And then I'm seeing more posts from him, and I'm like, okay, he is really writing this thing into the ground. Then I see one that goes, guys, this is October. This is not April 1st. I swear to you. And I'm like, what is he talking about? What's the link? And then I start looking at other people that I know that are as invested in Star Wars feeds as I would like to be. I mean, I'm not always on the feeds as well as I could be, but my smartphone helps. And yeah. I'm seeing this link, and I'm like, oh, wait, Disney buys Lucasfilm. What? No, that's not – William can't be real. Well, and then I start panicking because I'm like, William's not the one to mess with me. You know, that's not William's style. I'm like, oh, no. This can't be good. And I'm reading it, and I'm just like, whoa, this is really happening. It was a very surreal moment because it was one of those things that you just – it was like when you found out the prequel trilogy was coming all over again. It's like, is this really happening? I mean, we just had special editions. Like, is George Lucas actually getting back in Star Wars? And in this case, it's more like, has Lucas just sold out? Did he actually give up every fan's dream and have the voice? And then I read more of the article, and it's kind of like, well, is anything really going to change aside from George got a $4.4 billion check? I mean, granted, it wasn't $4.4 billion that he got some cash, some stock, but it's amazing to think that he would actually sell something that he alone in Hollywood, in corporations and things like that, had a monopoly on. I mean, you know, he dominated the market. It's very interesting from here where we go because the sky's the limit. I mean, everything is wide open. I mean, even Jennifer Heidel from Delray doesn't know exactly what's coming when it comes to continuity in the EU.
I mean, other than a handful of top execs, nobody does. But I mean, like, I'll be honest, Mark, it was Tuesday, a day that will live in infamy, a day that will be long remembered. If you will.
A day many Bothans died.
Exactly. But it was a Tuesday, and Tuesday nights are my and Bethany's Civil Air Patrol meeting nights, and so we're going to travel to Chattanooga early, as we all often do, where we meet. And, you know, we're working with the cadets throughout the evening each week as we volunteer, and that's kind of our routine. But I'll tell you what, guess what time we departed for Civil Air Patrol? It's about 3:30, 3:45 in the afternoon. The time this news broke was broken by CNBC. They were the first people to have it, now that I've looked back and done the research. It was broken at 4:05 or so. And we stayed out late. We had a meeting. It was great. We stayed in Chattanooga. Tuesday's kind of our day off. I'm usually stay off the internet that day, and it's kind of a sabbatical from the internet. It's a nice thing to do, every week because it's kind of my day off. But I'll tell you what, so we went and we stayed out for a late dinner and then traveled back, and it was about an hour back. And so the time I got home was just after midnight.
After midnight, Riley and Bethany gonna freak out.
So there's this tweet of mine. You can follow me on Twitter at the Riley Guy. There you go. But there's this tweet of mine that you'll scroll back through my timeline and you'll see.
I retweeted that sucker.
Holy crap! Oh, I just got on the internet.
Oh yeah, I went back. I was like, "You ain't kidding, brother."
And I mean, and at first, I'll be honest, I felt almost devastated that I had missed all the, you know, the excitement, the reaction, the pandemonium. But I will say this, though, the first thing I did, and I think this is kind of where I find the process of discovering this, of Star Wars fandom discovering this news, almost as intriguing as the news itself. I mean, the news itself is extremely exciting, but my reaction, which I think is a testament to the times we live in, was to scroll back to 4:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in my Twitter timeline, all 400 tweets, I never scroll back, and then just watch the chaos unfold in timeline. And people have talked about this, like, what would it be like if something, you know, terrible like 9/11 or some of these grand tragedies, or even most recently, thoughts and prayers go out to the people affected on the Upper East Coast for Hurricane Sandy. You see these live pictures coming in on the social networks like Twitter. In something like Star Wars fandom, it becomes something that's unique, because I was able to, 7 hours later, relive what other Star Wars fans did. And then once I was caught up in the next day, I really don't feel like I missed that much, which on the other hand, it's kind of silly to think that being away from the internet for 7 hours should mean anything that bad anyway, you know, when we're so used to our level of connectivity. Because, I mean, I don't have a smartphone plan, but I do have the iPod Touch, and I'll often, if I'm at a coffee shop or at somewhere that has Wi-Fi, I'll check, you know, social networks, do it. And that's, you know, when I'm at people's house visiting, or when I'm, you know, when I'm away from my home environment, or away from, which is where I do college study and all that kind of stuff. When I'm away from that environment, that's where I can usually – Wi-Fi's everywhere. You name it, McDonald's, Starbucks. Yeah. You. So I'm usually tentative, but this that one day I just didn't bother to check. You know, I was just laying back. But anyway, that's my story. That's where I was. A couple things to get out of the way. We'd actually talked to, and I'd sent out a mass email to a lot of good friends of the show that I wanted to get on this reaction episode. It's kind of funny because one by one the emails came back. And, you know, tonight just wasn't working. But gosh darn it, I've been waiting more than 2.5 days, and I've got to talk about it. So, I mean, one by one, the folks that we invited weren't able to come. And then Bethany told me about an hour and a half ago. She's like, well, actually, I've got a big test, which she does. She has a big test coming up Monday. So Bethany's not on. So, Mark, it's just you and me, and we're going to sit back, and we're going to talk about something that I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be able to talk about, and that is speculation and coverage of Star Wars Episode 7.
Well, I will tell you right off the bat, the first thing this did for me was made my enthusiasm and my intrigue and my just raw passion to learn more explode through the roof. Because suddenly, Insider Magazine, I'm going to be just poring over every single word in that again. I mean, right now it's like I'm just flipping through and I'm kind of just only really paying attention to the EU stuff. Now yeah. We're going to have prequel trilogy, original trilogy. You ain't going to see that in your Star Wars for a while here. I mean, it's going to slowly get weeded out with your sequel trilogy. I mean, this is just epic. I mean, I get excited. I think theme parks, you know. I mean, imagine yes. Disneyland as a total Star Wars land. I mean, oh. I've been dying for this. I've finally gone to Disneyland. I've never been to Disney World. Disneyland was epic, okay, for me. But to think about how Disney World has a whole bigger section of Star Wars, they have the Star Wars weekends, it depresses me. It's expensive to get there from here. I don't think I'll ever get there in my lifetime. I mean, I've tried for 2 dang celebrations and haven't made it. And yet, now I'm like, here is an opportunity for Disney to bring Star Wars home to me where I can get to it. Oh, I just, that excites me. Now, there is the side of me that I'm interested to talk to Nathan on Star Wars Beyond the Films, plug, about, because is REU imploding? Is it going to finally stand on its own? I mean, my initial thought here is finally what I've been wanting for a long time. I've been wanting George to do it. I've been wanting George to put a story out there that is going to make the EU either stand up as its own universe or implode and say, we're done. And honestly, with as long as Star Wars has been going and how the EU has been ran with it so far, I think it's time for it to stand on its own. That C-level continuity, it's time for it to be the EU's continuity. The EU should be able to cherry-pick what it wants. We have issues long-standing with Clone Wars and the Clone Wars, both G-level canons in the T-level slot given to us by Lucas's mind, and yet there are elements of that that have never quite fit in with the C-level continuity. Now continuity on the C-level side can pick and choose the events it wants to add and find retcons that will work with the stuff existing. It can continue to do that, and it doesn't have to be bound to go whatever direction the G-level stuff was going. But now it's like, well, what is G-level? Is it still going to be there? Are we going to still run with it? Anything George consults on, we're still going to treat it as G-level? Are we going to now have a D-level, not for detours, but for Disney? Or is it going to be WT? I mean, oh, there are so many aspects of this that have not even been addressed. I mean,
we can
worry about it, but really, and I think for you, this is probably the first time you're living it. I love these moments, these panic, the sky is falling moments, because it never falls. They find a way to present it and get it to work. This is a moment where the longer that they take, more people are going to experience what I experience all the time as an EU fan. Everyone's Star Wars is exploding, not just mine.
Actually, it reminds me, as I scroll through the Twitter, huge shout out Brian and Nancy from Tashi Station, some of the best people to follow on Twitter. And Twitter handles are leaving me at the moment, but
Nancy Pants and Raylan Reed.
Thank you. Thank you. Nancy Pants and Lane Winry, you can follow them, and you should, because they are hilarious Star Wars fans. And I just remembered, because progressively the news broke, there's that initial shock. Some people, you know, the diverse reactions that you would expect. Oh, this is horrible. Oh, this is fantastic. Oh, I don't know what to think. Actually, the most common reaction was probably, I don't know what to think, which I think is what you felt, Mark, and really what I felt. I wasn't sure what to think. I was certainly thrilled that we're getting more Star Wars films, and that's the big thing. But anyway, as I scrolled through the Twitter timeline, just as things got progressively heightened as we went, the reactions got more and more visceral, and people got more and more excited. At one point, just Nancy and Brian started tweeting in all capital letters, "Pandemonium! Dogs and cats are living together!" And, and I just started cracking up. Because truly, that's how we feel. Because it's amazing to me, and it gives you pause when you have to think about this. But that a film franchise can really turns your world upside down, and you have to stop and consider why is that? Because there are movies that we like talking about, but it's kind of just a process of trying to figure out emotionally and intellectually why is this such a big deal? Because I told you just before we started the video, we live in an era that has the Avengers making $1 billion domestically, just in the United States alone. We live where comic book characters with an Avengers film with a villain of Loki is mainstream enough to where it beats the Titanic, the greatest love story, as many people would say, of the past century. So it's interesting,
my friend.
I know, it's awesome. So I'll take this moment, Mark, and just run through Club Jade's initial post of the,
yeah,
of the facts.
I have been avoiding most of the news sites at this moment, just because I'm like, this is the initial bomb is blown. I'm hiding in my bunker, just kind of waiting for the reporters to sift through the facts from the fake and the flake and everything else. And,
yeah. Well, and of course,
yeah, lay it on me, because Club Jade, man, I'm very interested to see what they got to say.
All right, so here we go. It's the first post, and this was one of the first ones that I read. So I scroll back, October 30th, 33 comments currently. Here's the bullet points. So it's official. It's 100% for real. Disney acquired Lucasfilm. What does that mean? Well, let's talk about it. It means that Disney now owns Skywalker Sound. They own Industrial Light and Magic. They own the Indiana Jones franchise, the Star Wars franchise, although I don't think it goes into other smaller Lucasfilm properties.
Not the ranches. The ranches are still his.
And as far as the actual property itself still remains in the hand of Lucas. So it's going to be – the companies will still operate on their properties. So like the ranch and Big Rock, those will all be operated in the same location. They'll just be owned by Disney in the same way that Marvel, when Marvel was sold to Disney, we'll probably get a lot more into that later into the episode. But in the way that Marvel is still independently operating, it's just owned and financed mainly by Disney. So here it is. George Lucas himself will remain a creative consultant on the franchise. Kathleen Kennedy, which I guess this comes as no surprise, really, because will continue to lead, is the head of Lucasfilm, which she has been since George technically retired earlier this summer. The offer, it sold for $4.05 billion. Half of that was in hard cash, $2 billion cash, and the rest is Disney stock, which, by the way, Disney stock, I think, just skyrocketed because they own Star Wars. Let me run through these real quick. Episode 7 is on track. It's already under the pre-production, that preliminary stage. They're looking for a director, working on scripts. George Lucas has given his treatments, which, by the way, this is probably pretty big news. He had his own treatments of ideas to do 7, 8, and 9. He has given those to Kathleen Kennedy and Disney. It's still probably up in the air. That's not a guarantee that those are going to be the films, but I personally think it's most likely. Star Wars Episode 7, targeted for release 2015, and then another Star Wars movie every, and I quote, 2 to 3 years. Wow. And last points are, and it's not just films, parks, theme parks, games, and television are all on the menu. Disney does like the franchise's potential on TV. You could see something like the live action series maybe going to ABC, which is also owned by Disney. And you can see that. So Lucasfilms, basically their entire value is the Star Wars franchise, and that's not just speculation. Now that's kind of fact. Now that we know the finances of that $4 billion, pretty much all of its value goes into that. The Indiana Jones franchise is also owned, but the distribution rights, which is kind of where all the money's made as to what theaters get it, that's still owned by Paramount. So we're not likely to see any Indiana Jones films super soon. There are video interviews, there are audio, there's a much more comprehensive breakdowns, a lot more information than that, but that's the bare minimum, which by the way is more than enough. But that's the bare minimum information. And what we'll probably do, I'll say right now, is maybe next week or the week after when I get back into our Georgia annex and in my podcast studio where we can actually play audio and really get in depth. This is just reaction, and that's a lot to react to, Mark.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example of a changing of the guard like this. I worked at Kodak, Eastman Kodak, making Drive U X-ray film, and they were bought by Onyx. And they basically said, what we're going to do is we're going to take everything that you guys are doing in the medical industry, and we're going to create a new company with that. And it became what is called Carestream now. And when that happened, for us, nothing changed. We all came to work the same. The only thing that changed was the outside logo, and we had a few new labels out of the box. Kodak gave them the rights to use the name Kodak DriveU still for, and I'm not exactly sure here on the number, but we'll just say 25 years. You know, they gave them a nice long time, long mm-hmm. enough for the customer base to realize that, okay, this is no longer the original Kodak product, but it's the same, you know, the same formula, everything about it's exactly the same. The only thing difference is now it's a different owner. And when I think about it like that, there is nothing to panic about for me. It gets to that point where it's like, okay, they're going to still continue to put out their Star Wars books. It's just we're going to have movies actually continuing. But that makes me question, you know, a lot of different things. Like, are what we're going to see from here on out like a division of continuities? Like, you'll have continuity as it was before 2012, and then as of 2012, you have a new level of continuity where all the films take place together, and the Clone Wars cartoons as one entity, and the Star Wars EU that we knew before it doesn't belong in that universe anymore. It's got to go multi-universe, where this new one kind of takes off on its own, but the other one will continue, because they're going to continue to do things as they always have done. The thing I get worried about, and a lot of other people were worried about, is what's going to happen with Dark Horse, because Marvel is owned by Disney.
That's the big question.
I want to stay positive and say, you know, Disney's a shrewd operating system. They're smart investors. I honestly see them staying with Dark Horse. Why? Because they already got Marvel. Now they've got Dark Horse kind of, in a sense, in their tent, but yet not under the tent, but they're still working with them. It seems like another way to dominate the system.
The cash cow is the Star Wars license, and so Disney can remove the contract with Dark Horse and go over to Marvel. Now, we do know this much, and I will say this. Listen to, first of all, the Wampa's Lair, our own folks, they did their reaction night of, they had the episode on the website when I got home that evening. I was like, wow, okay, look at those guys. I mean, they're on top of it. The Wampa's Lair, they had a great reaction episode. Another one that you guys need to listen to, and by the way, we're always this way. It's other Star Wars podcasts that do great work. We will definitely showcase that. And that includes the Star Wars Action News guys. Nathan Butler was on their reaction episode. Theirs was probably the more trepidatious, not necessarily negative, but probably the more trepidatious of the various reaction podcasts. But it had some really good fodder, especially from the collecting side of things. Also fantastic. Also, some of the best reaction episodes, and the reason I'm doing these plugs is because that's where I have a lot of my thought processes have come from in the past 48 hours, is the Forcecast one. They actually had Steve Sansweet, who's the former Lucasfilm head of fan relations, on the podcast. And he had just hours earlier gotten out of a Lucasfilm board meeting about this transition. So he had that kind of raw firsthand impression from what's going on inside the company. And so those are all three reaction episodes. Other podcasts have done them. I know Geek Out Loud did one. It's not live as we're doing this recording, but I mean, there's a ton to listen to. But as I was saying, the cash cow, the moneymaker, and the real value here is the Star Wars license. And so all, especially for you EU fans, Mark, you guys will get, the Del Rey does have that book contract. They will release the next three books. Those will still happen. Dark Horse still has that new Star Wars, you know, only Star Wars titles that are coming out. Those are all those contracts are in place and are not going to, they're not going to not happen. Most certainly, because the way those agreements usually happen legally is that you have to pay, kind of like with a cell phone, if you break your contract early, you have to pay a fee. If Disney wanted to break that deal that Lucasfilm already has with Dark Horse, they would probably have to pay a very hefty fee to Dark Horse. But if 2 or 3 years from now the Dark Horse license runs out, there's no reason they might not switch over to Marvel for their future books. But that's just down in the weeds. Overall, I mean, if you look at Star Wars, when you talk about continuity, I've been on record on this podcast saying before, if Star Wars Episode 7, 8, and 9 happen and it's anywhere within 50 years, 100 years, whatever I've said, past Return of the Jedi, I mean, that's it for the expanded universe in that era. And that's what they're calling it Episode 7. They're not saying a new Star Wars movie. They're saying a new Star Wars movie and it's Episode 7. So I don't think they're just throwing that term around. I think that the scripts are being handled, and I think Lucas's treatment is being considered as the next film. I don't even really know what to think, Mark, in terms of the expanded universe going forward. Because if nothing else, even if continuity was perfect, the role of the expanded universe drastically changes, because the expanded universe, absolutely, what it's done so well is fill the void of when, mm-hmm, you know, Star Wars is in its darkest times and there's nothing on the screen. And I mean, Clone Wars has done a good job of filling my Star Wars void, and I love the Clone Wars. It ain't no Star Wars film.
Yeah. So there's been a comfort in knowing that George had no plans to go after Luke's story, that he considered it done, you know, that, yeah, there was that freedom of the EU for them to do their thing, and you didn't have to worry about George coming back later and doing what you saw with after he let them go into the Clone Wars. You know, I still think that was a mistake. He should have stayed off limits all the way. He should have never let them come in if he was still planning on playing in that playground.
Which I don't think even he had made that yeah, decision yet.
And that's the nature of that beast. But now let's stop and look at Marvel here. What did they do with Avengers? They created a new universe. I mean, everything that's going on in the Marvel movies is a multiple universe. That's how Marvel works. And that's a working scenario. You know, I see a lot of people that are like, well, my EU just died. Well, even if it did, it didn't go anywhere. It's still self-contained as a universe. Embrace, yeah, that. You know, and the more people that embrace that and demand Del Rey, hey, you get back on that horse, you get that contract going, you get my EU going, it's a universe and I want more. I mean, okay, I'm a Spider-Man fan, okay? But recently I got kind of hooked on the Ultimate Spider-Man line. And in it, it's an alternate reality where Peter Parker ends up dying. And in the end, this new Spider-Man comes in, and he's Mexican-American, and it's
really,
you know, it's a great story arc. And they've actually managed to have stories where right now they had one called Spider-Man, and Parker from the regular universe goes through a machine that Mysterio had created because he wanted to go into a new universe and rule it, and Parker ends up getting sucked through, and it's this one, and he finds out, oh my gosh, I have died, but it was a younger version of himself, because in this point Parker's like 40 something. But you know what, yeah, these are the only ways that you get some really in-depth fun stories that would have never happened. You have to have multi-universes in that case. I mean, look at Tales. You know, we had the Tales of where the second one, Luke dies. I mean, imagine if that universe kept going, if they go back every now and again and give us an additional 6-run issue arc in each one of those universes, because technically each one of those 4, 5, and 6 was in a sense an alternate universe in and of itself. Each one was slightly different. I mean, I didn't have all of them. I only got the one, but I'm pretty sure that's how each one of them worked. They were completely separate to themselves. And, you know, it would be cool to see them go back into those kind of things, but it was something that Star Wars has never done because they've always marketed themselves as this one big continuity. Well, now, yeah, I just don't see any way that that's going to continue. I mean, you know, again, look at what Marvel had happen with Disney. I mean, I just don't see them actually working that hard with the EU. I mean, George didn't, and that was his right. Disney has the right now. They have the right to do it, and they have the right to not do it. I mean, technically, they have the right to kill Luke tomorrow.
And they do, and that's just a weird world to live in, where we've been used to, ever since I've been in Star Wars fandom, every fan, whether they like the idea or they don't like the idea, has pretty much had to come to terms with the fact that George is God of this universe. And as a creative mind and as a storyteller, I mean, I think George Lucas is in competition with J.R.R. Tolkien for last century's, and I guess this century's, greatest storyteller. Yeah. He's a terrible writer, and that's not, you know, charitable to say, but in my honest assessment of it, he's not the best writer, but he's a talented director and even better world builder, his vision. And so the idea of him having treatments for 7, 8, and 9, my theory is that they will not heavily feature Luke, Leia, and Han.
Well, from what I remember, it was originally supposed to be the son redeems the father, and then the later one was going to be the father redeems the son, and it would be about Luke redeeming his son. But technically, yes, we kind of saw that with what happened in Legacy of the Force.
Well, and so I could see something that moves in that direction, where you could see maybe a Force ghost Luke Skywalker. And I mean, speculation, we'll be here for 5 hours, and we will probably for the next 3 years be speculating. It is.
Especially every time some new little tidbit comes out. That's the joy about this. For me, in a lot of senses, fandom has reset the clock. It's like, you know, so many people were like, I'm so bored, I'm done with this, I don't like the way the EU is going, I'm out. And now it's like, come back, get on the ride, step in, this sucker's going to go to light speed.
Yeah. And I do have some concerns, and actually I'll go ahead and bring those up now, because I do have some things I want to touch on that I've written in the notepad, but I don't really feel the need to go in any specific order. But a concern of mine, well, first of all, I will say this, if I haven't made it clear enough, I think this is the best thing that's ever happened to Star Wars. I mean, that's no exaggeration, that's my honest assessment. The idea... Star Wars, for better or worse, has been immortalized. And if every single movie after now is just manufactured Hollywood crap, which, you know, some people are afraid it might be, even so, the very idea that if I have kids someday, I mean, you have kids, Mike, you'll be able to take them to a theater and see a Star Wars movie. And that idea of an immortalized film franchise. I mean, look at James Bond. How many Bond films have there been? And then Skyfall is just coming out.
I mean, look how many variations of that TV show that did very well. I mean, and some of those episodes were really cheesy, but overall, whew, good ride.
Yeah. But it's going to be... I won't say it's a concern as much as an observation. It's going to be interesting to live in a world where you will have a board of directors and checks and balances making the decisions instead of, I want this scene, I want Jar Jar to be here, you know, or I want this sole creative vision. Because one thing I liked about Lucas's Star Wars, even in the prequels, even in the Clone Wars, is that he honestly cared about one thing, and that was his own vision. And that's what made him one of the most hated filmmakers and revered filmmakers of all time. I mean, when George Lucas, God forbid, passes away, the one thing everyone will say about him is, how can a man have made such a great impact on the world through filmmaking, and how could he be so hated for it? It's this weird conundrum of George Lucas's legacy that he's popular opinion, I mean, I won't say everyone thinks this way, but popular opinion is that a lot of the prequel stuff, especially Phantom Menace, people didn't like Jar Jar, et cetera, that populist opinion of George Lucas is what's pervasive right now. And what I was interested in was to really monitor the fan reactions from some of those jaded fans that haven't really been involved in Star Wars for the last 10 years, that really disliked the prequels and felt George Lucas sold out. They didn't like the special editions. And I wanted to see, because my theory is there are some people who just won't actually get excited about anything. It's too easy for them to just be negative and react negative all along. And I honestly expected a lot of fans to just say, just go along with it and say, you know, this Disney thing's a terrible idea and Star Wars is even more ruined. When in fact, the very person you're complaining about for the past 10 years is now no longer in charge of your franchise, you probably should be celebrating. And that did happen, but I was actually, Mark, genuinely surprised and flabbergasted, to use a $10 word there, at the amount of people who were actually reset and are now very excited for the future of Star Wars. Even people who just hated the prequels, they're actually excited, which kind of is contrary to my impression and, I guess, dismissal of a lot of people who are fans, but wouldn't see eye to eye with me on where the Star Wars universe is right now.
Think of it like this. I mean, okay, those fans that did not like the prequels, this is their opportunity for Star Wars to fix it for them. I mean, they could pretend that 1, 2, and 3 never happened, and if, you know, 7, 8, 9 rock, they got their 6 movies and that's all they'll ever watch. I mean, you're going to watch, again, a new set of factions. It's all going to form again. It is going to be fun, because like we were talking about before this started, you know, neither one of us were really involved on the internet side of fandom when the other movies got to these stages. You know, by the time I got on the internet and actually had a stable internet connection at my home that I wasn't just using when I was at work on a 30-minute break, you know, I mean, you know, I'd missed all that, you know, and yeah, you could go through the forums and read about it, but it's just not the same. I mean, you're just witnessing people's reactions. When you're the one reacting, it's a speechless moment. I mean, that's how I was. I kept retweeting things that, you know, well, not retweeting, but I'd go back and I would tweet things that would come to me later because I had to step away from all my technology stuff. I was just like, I was sitting at my mom's house with my daughter Jaina, my niece Aubrey, my nephew Logan, my sister, and my mom, and I'm just like, this is really happening. Because like I said, I thought it was a joke. And then when I'm reading that article, I'm like, this is really happening. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, my whole world has just got turned upside down. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, Lucas just sold Lucasfilm. Star Wars has just been sold to Disney. And, you know, I was just like, I'm speechless. I could not. I was dumbfounded, literally dumbfounded. And I'm still dumbfounded when I think about what's going to happen next. And that's where my excitement comes from, because the sky's the limit. I'm 100% with you. This is a great thing. Up until there is that side of me, up until they give us some kind of statement that is just like, why in the heck would you do that? Because that's what you were saying about the board of directors. That's where Lucas has had that unique opportunity, you know, to have his, as I always said, his ever-changing vision, you know. And that, I think, where he made fans bitter is because, you know, he kind of made stuff up as he went, and his mind and his opinion changed as he went and as things happened. That's part of the creative process. But the problem was he was giving tidbits of what he was planning originally to the people. And then those people were assuming that that's where he was going to continue to go. And, you know, it falls back on them for assuming. But, you know, that's the nature of how it went. And now we're at a spot where it's like, where do we go from here? And, I mean, we don't even exactly know who on the Disney side of things is going to be making the decisions. Is it going to be a board of directors? Is it going to be one appointed person?
The only person that we know who has concrete creative input is Kathleen Kennedy. And we do know that she is set to be the executive producers of the films.
Now of Lucasfilm, right? Didn't they change
Which her? Is an odd balance, because she's going to be the executive producer of these next three films. She's the president of Lucasfilm, although Howard Rothman, this is side note news that's been kind of buried, Mark. Howard Rothman's former Lucasfilm executive, he was involved with the creation of the original trilogy, and I think he was a producer, and then later on he was, I believe, head of Lucas Licensing and a number of other things at the company. He retired 2 years ago or so. He's actually coming out of retirement to an executive level, and this is where I don't have the information in front of me, but he's coming back to an executive level position in the company to help run the day-to-day things on the company so that Kathleen Kennedy can focus on being the executive producer of the films, which, for those who don't know, the executive producer, what her job is to help find the director, help find the screenplay writers, then help find the actual writers, and then find the actual movie producers. As executive producers over the whole thing, the movie producers will be down in the trenches of the actual films, and the director will be in charge of the day-to-day creative process. But, I mean, yeah, we're now in a time where Disney... I think the best way to look at this news is to really look at some close comparisons with how Disney has handled the Marvel acquisition. Because, Mark, you're a Marvel fan even more than I am.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
And I remember the horror... I mean, there's a terribly negative reaction to my memory when Disney bought Marvel. Like, oh, no. Well,
I will tell you about that front... because. I was excited that Marvel had their own studio, and they didn't even have it, I think, even a year or 2 years, and then they sold it to Disney. It was like, what? You finally have creative control. You just went George Lucas on this, and now George Lucas is pulling a Marvel. That was very interesting to see. But, you know, I really think one thing Disney has is they've got the vision when it comes to families. And the one thing Marvel has always been doing is – been pertaining themselves and aiming towards the younger generations, the kids, yeah. You know, and keep it relevant enough for adults. And Disney has ran with that. And I really think that's a marketing campaign that they'll be good with.
Well, I mean, let's look at this. Disney, their first big acquisition was back in the late 90s, and it was Pixar. They bought Disney Pixar. Very good decision. Some of the best animated films that have come out in the past 10 years have been Pixar films. Some of my personal favorite films. That's fantastic. They bought The Muppets. The most recent Muppet film was very popular. I haven't seen it myself, but it was a lot of... The general consensus I heard was The Muppets were brought back to life and made relevant for a whole new generation of kids who otherwise wouldn't know what Muppets Treasure Island was or what any of the others.
Jason Segel rocked the Muppets, man. Just rocked.
Okay, so you've seen it, you were pleased. And then the Marvel acquisition just happened, and now it's Star Wars. And it's just interesting, with Marvel and the Muppets, I really see this as Kevin Smith, filmmaker and also podcaster, had something on his Facebook page where he talked about how this was really a... It's sort of like Disney's quest in modern times to recapture that young male demographic, because they with the Disney princesses, the Disney films have been really really popular amongst girls, but they've never captured the imagination of young boys, and I think they have to some extent with Cars. Cars is a big franchise. I'm sorry?
I was saying Peter Pan, you know, that and the old Cars, Peter Pan, so, for me, when I think about the Disney movies my kids watch, my son, his favorite two are Peter Pan and actually the live-action Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one as well. So I can see Disney is making some very creatively smart decisions, and Disney is a huge company. For listeners, you guys should know, Disney owns, let's name a couple things. They own, obviously, Marvel, Pixar, and now Lucasfilm. They also own, little-known fact, ESPN. They also own, little-known fact, ABC, little old TV network you may or may not have heard of. You know, Disney is this monster of entertainment, and Bob Iger, it's a whole different world to live in, because Star Wars is no longer the championing independent film franchise, and I think there is a genuine loss there, where even though people a lot of times disagreed with George Lucas's creative vision, you can feel when you watch something like Star Wars, you can feel that singular vision coming across the screen of that this came forth from a man's mind, that a lot of blockbusters recently have failed. I mean, think about this. When Disney made John Carter, they thought it would be a fantastic hit. It flopped. And I think films like John Carter and I mean, a couple others popped to mind. And they're leaving me at the time. A couple years ago, The Golden Compass. There have been some of these grand, what people want to be the next Harry Potter, or the next Star Wars, or the next Lord of the Rings. They just fail.
Aragon. And I think there's another one. That was a book Aragon. That only but, the first one come out. And
I think the ones that fail have – the reason they fail – that is why you fail. The reason they fail is because they get – too into the realm of an executive board making marketing decisions that impact the film too much, where you have they become too predictable. And I think one thing that
you always have to worry when Whedon proved, decides a decision.
Yeah.
Well, that we can make more money if we go this way. Granted, that one would tell a heck of a story, but more money. We
gotta
go more
What's
money.
What's funny? When you lose sight of that and you try to make more money, you do the very thing that you don't want to do, is that then you have a huge box office flop because people say, yeah, that movie was way too predictable. And I think that's where one thing that Disney's done well in recent years, and specifically Marvel has done, not all Marvel's movies have been hits, but all the recent ones have. So you think about this. Think about Daredevil. Remember Daredevil?
Yeah.
Think about the Elektra movie. I mean, those are not very successful in terms of
but
box
those
office.
Those ones, when they first announced it, it's like, really? Of all the Marvel characters, you're picking these people? What the heck?
But
I mean,
Iron Man.
Where is my Venom movie? I mean, I would love to see a Flash Thompson version of Venom. I mean, Flash Thompson from Spider-Man. You remember watching that Spider-Man movie? Yeah, he ends up becoming Venom. He loses his feet. He's Agent Venom. They've actually turned Venom from a villain to a hero. It would be an excellent story.
Yeah, but going back to Marvel, Iron Man proved, Jon Favreau's Iron Man proved, that we are ushering in a new era of big summer blockbuster movies that can be done by a big studio like Marvel and Disney, but can still have the heart of the film that come forward. And then you have subsequently Thor, which I liked fairly well. And then
Thor, Captain actually, I liked him as an Avenger, but I never really liked Thor comics. And they did a good enough job that I actually enjoyed Thor all the way around. I liked the movie, and I liked his addition in the Avengers. I mean, he rocked in the Avengers comics, but in the movie, man, his character was great.
Well, yeah, and then you go on to Captain America and the rest of the Avengers films, where they each have their own distinct style that's very, very good films, solid, entertaining summer blockbuster films that I think are just fantastic movies. And then Avengers happens this summer. $1 billion domestic, nothing like it before. It's the top grossing film of all time. And Joss Whedon, also Marvel, also Disney, proved that you can have a film with a lot of heart, that's a great entertainment film, that is done at a corporate level. And that's what relieves me in terms of, I'm not too afraid that Star Wars will go all corporate, because I've seen Avengers. And for all the people the very negative people I've seen on Facebook or on even on the website with the comments, my one question when they say, Disney's for kids, it's gonna suck. One thing I say is,
Pirates.
Have you seen Avengers?
Or have Pirates of the Caribbean, that's Disney too.
Yeah.
That's creepy, man. When I first watched that, I was like, this is a Disney show? Wow.
Yeah.
But you know, I wanted to touch on something real fast.
Sure.
Summer blockbusters. Excellent point. Avengers, another good one. Now let's add Avengers, summer blockbusters, and the year 2015. And what do we have? Oh, wait, isn't that Avengers 3 coming out there, or 2?
Two.
So now let's go back to something else you said. Star Wars, Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings always comes out in December. Now, to me, it seems like Disney would be smart to not put Star Wars coming out in the summer blockbuster like it normally would, and put it in the winter slot, because it, like Lord of the Rings, would do good. I say it would do better than, say, the Avengers in that same slot, because it's Star Wars, and it's Star Wars new in theaters.
Yeah.
I think that is going to be what you're going to see come 2015. That's my speculation on
the
record.
So you're saying a winner, which would make sense because they only have 2 years and 8 months to get this thing in theaters, which, I mean, it's doable. It's a very fast production time. The Star Wars movies usually take 3 years. Even the prequels took 3 years of production. Now, granted, you've got the powerhouse of Disney who's doing all the Marvel films.
We just shoot this engine up, man. That's.
but it would give it a little bit longer. Everyone's kind of assumed it would be May, but I could see that. Although, granted, that I'll even add fuel to the fire of your case, Mark. Where think about this: 2015 has three huge summer movies that we know are coming out. One, Avengers 2. Two is obviously Star Wars. The Justice League movie comes out then that summer.
Ooh. And don't we have another Spider-Man movie too?
I'm sure we do. I don't know what year. I think it's 2014, not 2015. I think that adds to your case, Mark, of if you've got those two huge blockbusters. Now, granted, you could just say, I'm going to put The Avengers out in late June or July, and it won't really compete that much because Star Wars will have already been in theaters 6-8 weeks, and most people will have already seen it. But because some people, you know that with a standard Marvel movie, it's going to do really well for at least 6 weeks.
Yeah.
More likely 8 weeks. Avengers did well the whole darn summer. Yeah,
I was thinking you were talking Avengers.
but Captain America, you know that you've got the rest of June and July easily going on.
Let's just say like this, okay? All the Marvel movies that come out recently, I didn't see any of them in theater but the Avengers. I made sure I was there for that one.
Yeah. That's a good point. And so Avengers was just one of those must-see, repeat-viewing summer films that I saw twice, and that's unusual for me. I usually don't see movies twice unless, for instance, The Hobbit comes out in December, and I will probably see that film two or three times in theaters because, I mean, it's going to be fantastic. Whole nother discussion. But, wow. Mark, my friend, we are almost an hour into this, and I've got a couple more things to talk about. So as long as you're good,
real quick, good. Really quick, I would like to talk about the possibility of the EU not being ruined by this, with them actually going in a direction that doesn't have the big three. I mean, you know, one possibility is isolated stories set on planets that necessarily don't connect to events going on in the greater universe. I mean, you could easily send a Jedi into a planet and do little stories like this. There is plenty of opportunity in that aspect, as well as keeping what is existing in the EU. I mean, imagine if it's just a new planet that has just been created for this alone, and it is a backward planet that's never really been visited by the Republic before. You could do things like that in many cases, or you could go into the unknown regions, wild space. There's plenty of unknown, untouched locations in Star Wars and in the EU. The problem is it's going to require a lot of work, and that's where the naysayers step in and go, well, they're not going to take the time. And you might be right, but you know what? I want to be optimistic here, and I want to think about that for a second. I think that it could be very easy. I mean, there is the other side of me that wants the EU to stand up on its own, and it feels like it needs to have a major shift where it couldn't possibly stand in the continuity anymore with what we have in the films. But there are so many ways you can look at that, you know? I mean, there's so many ways you can look at all of this. But I really think, though, that they could tell stories and continue to tell stories about the new characters that they provide and keep it so the EU exists. And EU can even tie things in, you know, certain one-off topics or, you know, plots that have come and gone.
Regardless, I mean, Mark, it's coming. Whatever these new Star Wars films are, whether they directly contradict all continuity, it's out the window, parallel universes now, or whether they actually try to somehow fit it together, regardless, you're going to have tie-in material with the new films, because just purely from the marketing standpoint, if you introduce a brand new Star Wars character in these movies, you're going to have books and comics about them. Yeah. No doubt. This might lend to your theory, because E! Online were the first people to get this scoop. They have someone inside Lucasfilm. This broke yesterday, so it's actually more recent than the rest of the news. E! Online talked about they have a source inside Lucasfilm. Yeah, I'm referencing my notes here. A source inside Lucasfilm that says this is not going to be based on any expanded universe work. Matter of factly, it's not Thrawn trilogy, it's not Legacy comics, not going to be based or even really reference any expanded universe story. It's going to be its own, quote, original story. Now, this is an anonymous source inside Lucasfilm, but I find that credible. I think, as I said a few minutes ago, I think George's treatments, this is not Disney owns it. I mean, you don't pay $4 billion to still have to say yes to George Lucas.
Yeah.
I do think that they will go with these story treatments if they're solid story treatments, which, considering the fact it's George Lucas, I'm pretty sure these are compelling stories. If they go with that, I don't think it's going to reference Luke, Leia. I don't think it's going to reference the big three. Maybe cameos, maybe small parts, but I think it will definitely, if nothing else, at least be the passing on the torch to the next generation.
Well, to add to that speculation, though, and it goes kind of against what I'm hoping for, Mark Hamill has known about this, I believe, since August.
That's another thing I actually had. Yeah, I actually have that story up. This is also from Club J.
We'll add to that, though, real quick, that if I recall correctly, he's already signed a contract saying he will come back to play an Elder Luke Skywalker.
Now, that's not a contract. This is a celebration. I was actually at his panel when he said this, where he said, I will categorically love to play Luke Skywalker again. And everybody cheered. It's like, oh, wouldn't that be great if only they're going to do more movies. Now, of course, we know they are. And this kind of contradicts what E! Online said, saying it's an original story. Which, you know, original story does not mean nothing to do with Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, but exactly.
But, you know, it might.
There's been plenty of really cool original stories that have had unoriginal characters.
Exactly. It was in an interview with Entertainment Weekly that he did shortly after this news broke. And this is a quote straight from the article from Mark Hamill. He said, so Mark was telling the story that he found out about it this summer. I think he probably found about it at Celebration, if I had to guess. He said, when I heard that we decided we're going to do 7, 8, 9, I was gobsmacked. He said, what, are you nuts? I can see both sides of it. This is Mark Hamill. Because in a way there was a beginning, middle, and an end, and we all lived happily ever after as the way it should be. And it's great that people have fond memories, if they do have fond memories. But on the other hand, there is this ravenous desire on the part of the true believers, I like that little Stanley reference, to have more and more material. So he's kind of going at it from both sides. So, you know, Mark, definitely pretty good at keeping secrets. But, you know, the fact that he found out this summer, it was probably at Celebration, if I had to guess.
Well, I'll tell you a secret, Riley.
What's
Mark's
that?
Marks are four-letter words, as are Sith, so we're very good at keeping secrets.
Yeah, well, there you go. Exactly.
You know, I recall, though, the rumor that he had signed a contract, though. I remember that from, like, years ago, and you know, not anything recent. So I'm curious. I want to go back and look up on that to see if there's any actual fact to that. Because, like, yeah, I remember distinctly him saying once before that he had actually been okay with signing or actually had signed a thing saying it, but he honestly never thought it would happen. So it's I find it very interesting because I've always kind of saw an elder Han Solo as Dennis Quaid, and everybody's always like, what? Is Harrison Ford? But
I can see it.
Back to that, it's like, well, would Harrison come back if they did do it? I mean, and Carrie Fisher, you know, she might be ready to do it, but would they want her to come back? Is that going to be what they want the character to look like anymore? I mean, that's the thing with the EU. They've always kind of gone with a likeness, but never, you know, been accurate. Like, they don't take a now version of Mark Hamill and apply that to be Luke. They age the version of Mark Hamill then. And so, you know, there is that side of it. I mean, what if they decide to CGI these guys and we just hear their voices? I mean, I've always said they could do something like that. I mean, you know,
yeah,
the sky's the limit here. Disney, Pixar, CGI off the hook.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, oh my goodness, I could see both ways of having some or all of the original three back. If it's a Luke, Leia, Han story, which I think it should be, I think it would be too dangerous to just abandon the characters that everyone's loved so much for the past 37 years. Because Star Wars is about the characters, and to invent new characters that have the same impact is a daunting task. I do not envy whoever the screenplay writers are, whoever the directors are. I do not envy them for what they have to.
Well, but think
be able
about
to do.
The new characters in the prequel trilogy right off the bat. The first
it's
two
true.
That die are people that we love the most: Qui-Gon Jinn, Darth Maul. Although he didn't die.
Nah. What we don't know is that Darth Maul is going to be the villain in the new Star Wars film.
That wouldn't really surprise me too much.
I will say this, Mark. The first time I really found out about the expanded universe in any great detail beyond the Young Jedi Knight books and the Jedi Quest series, some of those young adult books that I read as a kid, it was when I bought – I knew the expanded universe existed, and so Bethany and I went in. We split the cost for the Essential Guide to Characters 2nd Edition. This book was made probably midway through the Yuuzhan Vong books. So it was the mid early 2000s, And I just was reading these character profiles and their stories just in brief summary. And I was like, who's Mara Jade? You know, those basic questions that, you know, she's been around forever, but I didn't know who she was. And when I found out Luke got married, that was so weird to me. But weirder than ever was when I read about Palpatine and some of the subsequent stories in the Expanded Universe, which I've come to accept more recently. But the idea of cloning Palpatine or the Sith returning, a lot of these, you know, plot devices that the Expanded Universe has used, I honestly really hope, and I won't be devastated if they do, but I think that they need to appreciate the fact that at the end of Return of the Jedi, it truly is a happy ever after story. They have defeated the ultimate evil of the galaxy. You need a new villain that can't be Palpatine's clone. It can't be two more Sith that we didn't know about that were there all along. You know, I think that, and in the same way I think that this is also true of the Expanded Universe, it damages the sacrifice that Luke and Vader, especially Vader, made. That Vader gave his life and fulfilled his destiny as the Chosen One. And I think it takes away from that if they're not careful. That's probably the biggest challenge for these new screenplay writers, the producers, the people who will be making this next film. They have to move forward in a galaxy where things have been made right. And this is not a family. Star Wars is not about a family drama. So if you want to thematically get Star Wars, you have to have a great villain and you have to have ultimate evil, because that's what the story's about. At the same time, if it's set after Return of the Jedi, you've got this big conundrum of, if you make ultimate evil, you kind of, in a way, nullify the great sacrifice that is Darth Vader's sacrifice in Return of the Jedi. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you call Riley nerding out.
Well, you know, I agree. It's definitely character-driven. But when I think about it, I see it lately more as a story of the struggle of the Force. You know, that we see these factions of Force users, and by the end we see a kind of balance. So I would like to see something set farther out, like, say, New Jedi Order time, where Luke actually has established a Jedi Order. I would like to see a story based on the Jedi Order, you know, where the Jedi Order is either at peril or is, you know, in the heart of something, you know, be it whatever they're going up against. It doesn't have to be Sith, it doesn't have to be the Yuuzhan Vong, but it'd be cool to see their peril, you know. Maybe it could be Boris Fehley or some political faction where, you know, they are afraid that the Jedi are too much like Palpatine or something like that. But it was interesting when I think about, you know, we watch in the prequel trilogy the Jedi fall, and then at the end of the original trilogy we kind of start to see the Jedi rise. So it'd be cool to see this next trilogy with the Jedi back in power again, and, you know, could they lose it all, or are they going to be able to, you know, save the day and have a nice happy ending status quo again?
Yeah.
I would like to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are the conversations that I think are more important than who's going to play Luke Skywalker or who's going to be the next director. The next one is, thematically, storytelling-wise, how do you tell a Star Wars story that feels like Star Wars? Because, I mean, to me, the prequels are Star Wars. I mean, a lot of people didn't like them, but oh, thematically, they're the exact polar opposite of the original trilogy, where the hero falls, and it's that that tragedy arc. So, you know, in a way, thematically, I still felt the prequels very much had that Star Wars feel to them. So how do you move forward? Yeah.
Well, real quick, another ponder that just came to me. Those naysayers that are really mad about how the prequel trilogy doesn't quite mesh up, George never said he was going to go back and give you the Blu-ray of the original. Disney could easily give you a Blu-ray that's got your theatrical version. It could have a remastered version. You could have wildings that actually look like the Clone Wars version.
Not to bust a bubble. Disney does not have the distribution rights to the 6 current films. 20th Century Fox still has the distribution rights.
Now, is that something they're going to be able to keep, or is that something that, like, going on with the old Marvel stuff where they have to continue to do something every so many years, or
they would have
to Disney?
Yes, yeah, something like that. I don't know all the exact details, but it's not permanent, I know that. But currently, like, they're still doing the release of 2 and 3 next year in theaters, and then they'll probably have the original trilogy leading up to the new films, and those will still, they're still on track to do that, but it will be 20th Century Fox distributing that. It's still separate from Disney, doing those theatrical releases, as well as home video releases for the films themselves. But, you know, that's not to say that, you know, a couple years from now we won't see the theatrical cut, because I mean, we did there the theatrical cut, and this is always a pet peeve of mine, is the theatrical cut of the original trilogy, or at least the unspecial editionified one, is available on the DVDs, if you, on the 2004 DVDs, on the bonus disc. It is available. So it is, granted, it's the Laserdisc version, it's not the original theatrical print. There's a lot of speculation that George Lucas himself destroyed the original theatrical print. In the same way he did this, holiday special, but yeah, it's interesting.
Well, it'd be
interesting
to think if they actually got those rights down the road though, and went back and say like the Obi-Wan and Vader fight. You know, I've long said, how cool would it be to see, you know, some young guy in the Vader costume and only the back of a young guy in the Obi-Wan go into town. You know, not the slow, quick clack, click, clack, crack, but a style battle with just these two old fogies drawing on the force to move themselves like they were a couple teenagers again. I mean, yeah, like you pointed out, a big hurdle, but if they ever got past that hurdle, that's an open possibility. I mean, Lucas was never going to do it, but you know, if the powers that be in Disney get a hold of that someday, that could happen. I mean, there is that big hurdle, but that's the beauty about where we're at right now. I mean, I think that you know, at the beginning of the episode, you were talking about how some of the naysayers of George are kind of like panicking when they should be rejoicing. And that's one of those things. It's like, you know, you knew what you were getting with George, and now you don't have a clue. And I think that that's what you're seeing there, is that I'd rather go with the devil I know than the devil I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I could definitely see that kind of philosophy. Yeah, I do want to mention a small thing. This just a very brief mention. I think bears mentioning. Did I mention mentioning?
You may have mentioned it.
I may have mentioned it. Is that George Lucas? This $4 billion. Lucas has announced that he is setting up an educational foundation. That most of this money is going to. So this is not contrary to what. I think that the part of the populist belief of George Lucas is, yes, he is an egomaniac in the sweetest sense. I mean it in the sweetest sense. But yes, he's someone who will not budge, who believes in himself and believes in his own vision and will not budge, which is what part of what makes him great, part of what makes people don't hate him. But at the same time, he's not a money grinch in terms of he's not in it for the money. And I don't think, and a lot of people say, well, this proves that George Lucas was in it for the money, $4 billion. Well, no, it doesn't. He's actually, almost none of this money is he himself keeping for his own personal.
That was my bondrum. Like, does this officially mean George Lucas sold out?
Yeah, exactly. And I could see where you would think that, but it's good to see it. And also number two, not to be too cynical, but in terms of tax shelter, if you just have a cool $4 billion show up in your bank account, there's a lot of taxes that apply. So an educational foundation is not only a good charitable way to have the money move in. George Lucas has been big in education for years, but it's also a really good way to, you know, prevent Uncle Sam from getting it. Which, by the way, I think the money's better in the hands of George Lucas's educational foundation than it is in the hands of the federal government. I will tell you that right now.
Well, you know, touching back on what I said about the transition from Kodak to Carestream, and what we're seeing here, I could easily see George having, like, let's just call it the GL clause.
The GL clause. By the way, Mark, title of the episode, the GL clause.
Nice. But, I mean, they've tried to buy it from him before and the price wasn't right. But what if they said, George, we'll let you run it exactly the way you're doing it now, or we'll let you do what you're doing and back off with the option to come back in and run it the way you've been running it. You know, G-level canon, everything stays the same. The only difference is we get to sell it to more people, and we'll keep that money. You know, what if, you know, his consulting is basically
the creative
what we've seen
consulting
the last 5
part.
Years, you know,
yeah, because I'm very curious as to how that works, because technically, a creative consultant which is his title now on these new Star Wars films. He's the creative consultant where he'll be on the phone with Kathleen Kennedy saying, I think you should do this. You know, he has the treatments. I think he's going to be more involved than people think. Because he gave them his own treatments that he wrote himself. And he also, wow, my mind's blanking. Oh, and he also has that creative consultant thing, which is, mind is working. That's the same title he has with the Clone Wars, and we all know that he's very involved with the Clone Wars. So as long as, I mean, Disney still has, I believe truly that, you know, this $4 billion buys them the right to do whatever the heck they want with the next Star Wars movies. But I think they would be foolish not to have his vision involved, even from a marketing perspective. If you say George Lucas's handprints are on this, it makes it a more popular sell.
Well, look at Clone Wars. Not the Clone Wars, but the original one. That was what happened. Yeah. It was like from the mind, the creative mind of George Lucas. I mean, and all the way up until he got more involved in the Clone Wars, you know, you heard all about George's great Clone Wars, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, we're just
sure. Gonna...
But when the Essential Reader's Guide came out, they still mentioned that the original Clone Wars is just as much canon as the rest of it, which is one of those things that people like to nitpick. Well, if that one's canon, then how come they don't line up, George? You know, where's your vision? You know, I mean, it's just one of those things where I really truly think that Disney is smart enough that they're going to continue with the status quo. But there is that other contingent of fans out there that are like, well, if Disney's smart, they're not going to tick off the fan base. And it's like, do you think they really care about ticking off fan bases? Because fan bases are going to forgive. I mean,
well,
they could have ticked off some of the fan base when they made Avengers,
yeah.
But it was a hit.
Sure, and yeah, it was a huge hit.
50% out there that's pissed, but it was a hit.
Yeah, and that's a big thing I keep hearing is people say, well, what about the fan films? What about the fan sites? What about fan podcasts? Or, you know, I really don't think. What about the 501st Legion? Is the mouse going to clamp down on all this? And it would be stupid to do that. I don't think
Emperor Disney Mickey.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to be that. But stupid. Star Wars has been carried by the fans.
It would be
years.
A mistake, nay, the size of leaving an exhaust port open on a Death Star.
Amen, brother. Exactly. Oh my goodness. Well, I have two more questions to cover before we go. But before I do that, I have to find it.
Today's episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by Chewy Cookies. They're chewy.
I have to find the time I have to find the question. Here we go. 19 comments. I put on Facebook, I just asked the questions, you know, Disney purchase of Lucasfilm makes me feel, and I fill in the blank, because that's a great, you know, the Facebook question, it's easy to answer, and you'd see the old GL with Mickey Mouse at Disney from last year. But I want to just read, pepper through these. This is our Facebook reaction, and I would love to give everyone's names, but it would take too long, because there are 19 of these comments that I just want to...
So if you hear your comment, that was probably you.
My first one... Exactly. Well, actually, my comment on this particular one was hopelessly optimistic, which I think still describes my emotions, is that I am extremely optimistic beyond reason. Like, I shouldn't be this optimistic, but I am. I'm extremely optimistic. But yeah, here we go. Hopeful, ecstatic, hopeful for the future and the longevity of Star Wars. A new hope has risen. This is great news. Excited for the future of Star Wars. I want a Star Wars Disneyland. Stunned. That's a good one. I like that. Nice and short. I really hope they get it right. Hoping they don't mess with the comic book and novel continuity. And then one poor fellow, Bill Thompson. Sorry, I'm going to give your day disappointed and ultimately let down. He's alone, though. That was really the only... I mean, there's plenty of trepidation, but if you look out... let's see... One person reacted two words, Kathleen Kennedy. And we haven't talked about her a lot, but she is a very qualified movie producer. And then, of course, another, looking forward to the awesomeness. So, yeah, and the last comment I'll read, which, by the way, Star Wars makes me feel, and this is probably the longest answer to it, people make me laugh. Why is everyone so stupid? Well, Nick, actually, that's a question we will be asking for a long time. Is more Star Wars movies is what true Star Wars fans and I believe would want, and I believe they are going to be awesome to have new direction, new directors, and writers. So there you go. That's a largely in my opinion, shockingly optimistic side reaction.
Your most optimistic is right here. If they blow, if they are just absolute junk.
Worst case scenario.
Then you just pretend it never happened. It's called personal canon. We've been using it for a long time. It's a coping mechanism. And I, as the defender of the EU, personally endorse it.
This psychological treatment is endorsed by Illogical Rogue, too.
I mean, if it helps while you're doing it, you can do the Forrest Gump to your God, make me a bird so I can fly far, 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 far away from here. I don't care how you have to do it. Just try to find a positive way. I mean, you know, yes, I will say, have your moment of the sky is falling, it's doom and gloom. But, you know, remember what you love about this. It's Star Wars. You're going to get lightsabers. You're going to get X-Wings. You're going to get space battles. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, well, I this is where I wish I had my audio equipment since I'm away from my studio, but if you think about it, I would love to play the drop. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah.
And I feel fine. Actually, that's not exactly
what happened to the Star Wars that I used to know. The movies.
Movies I used to know. All right, two questions to close us out, Mark. It is now likely less than 3 years before the next Star Wars film comes out.
Is that going to be the same time the next Celebration comes out, or the year after?
It might be. It depends on whether they do the 2 or 3 year thing. If it's the 3 year thing, it'll be the same year. Which they may do 3 years because they've got Europe next year, Celebration Europe. So they may not turn around so quickly and come back. So yeah, it may be the same year as
maybe
the film.
Maybe it will be August.
I wouldn't be surprised. But all right. Oversaturation. This is one of the larger reactions I've heard of people who are most concerned. Is it when they say minimum of 3 more Star Wars films and likely another another film every 2 or 3 years? So a la Bond, a la Star Trek. That would really shift the way Star Wars is being done. Is it possible, or are you worried about that point of oversaturation where too much of a good thing?
Absolutely not. And I'm going to go with Star Trek as my example here. I would love to have more Trek. A lot of people threw that right out there. Well, they went alternate universe there, and that just. And I'm quick to point out, no, they didn't. If you've ever been a fan of Star Trek, you've known that they've dealt with time loops all the time. What you saw is an alternate timeline, not necessarily an alternate universe, but they do work the same. And if you look in the movie, there are actually points where you see that Alpha Spock is alive, and he's also mind-melded with a young Kirk. Young Spock is mind-melded with a Romulan. So they both, of this timeline, have memories of the existing stuff, the stuff that came before. It had to come before for you to be where you're at right now. And so, you know, it's one of those things. For me, it's like, depending on how they do this, I could see the Star Wars logo continuing on in that regard of, you know, well, we're going to, like, say they do, like, a Chunthor style story, and I'm keeping this EU. Chunthor was a lot like Star Trek. I have no idea what that was, but it was loud in my ear.
No.
It was a Star Wars, like, it was a Star Trek-like spaceship that had, like, a floating Jedi Academy, and they would go around. And I've always thought, you know, that would be a great premise of a TV show or anything of that regard where, you know, you've got your Jedi, they're traveling around, you could do a total Starship Enterprise thing with Jedi. Now, you could have, like, say, Luke decide, I'm going to commission a new Chunther, and boom, we're going to set it off, and there's your TV show. You know, Jedi every week, new planet every week, a planet of the week, they go to a new planet, they got to settle some revolt, some uprising, some whatever. There's so many ways that they could work that could continue on. And again, like I said, you know, you could find where if they decide to go movie or into the TV realm, where you could have Star Wars universes that have their own continuity. I mean, it could be very cool.
I think about Joe Johnson wanting to do the Boba Fett movie. Remember that news that came out a while ago?
Oh, you know, yeah.
That kind of thing. Which,
that could be a lot of fun.
I couldn't agree more, Mark. It's a different Star Wars universe to live in, but it's not one I'm not unwilling to dive in and give it the old college try, if you will.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then lastly, this is what most people have been doing. We are now going to shamelessly indulge in unfounded speculation of the future creative persons behind episode 7. So I want to just bounce off three things specifically. Casting, I just want to, we'll throw out a couple names, but more importantly, I think, than just the casting, is the director and the composer. We haven't mentioned it, but poor old John Williams is now 80 years old. What do you think?
Better get working. That's what I got to say. Dude, you conscript him now, Disney. Get him working. Get that man's creative mind back there.
You're Bob Iger. You're Kathleen Kennedy. Do you try to get Mr. Williams back? What'd he do?
Does Anthony Daniels do 3PO?
Are you kidding? He already has the suit on.
That's what I mean. That's my, does a bear beep in the woods? I mean, does Anthony Daniels play 3PO? That is it right there. Yes, absolutely. You tap him. If he can't do it, okay. Can you consult who we're going to get? You know, let's get Klein in. I believe I'm saying his name right.
Kevin Kiner.
Get Kiner in there to work with you. You know, consult with him.
Well, Clone Wars.
It's one of those things. It's like you hear his music and you think Star Wars. So you at least either bring him in or you get someone that will pay an homage to his style.
I think John Williams, in the same way that George Lucas is a creative consultant, John Williams needs to at least meet with or mentor. I like the idea in my head of whoever is the next composer needs to be a student of John Williams, because he defined, well, film music with Star Wars, but I mean, just such a great composer. And I mean, if I was just going to pull a name out of my head, who I would want would be composer of Gladiator, Pirates of the Caribbean, Inception, and then a number of other films more recently, Hans Zimmer. I think he would be, especially if you listen to the third Pirates of the Caribbean, he's a very diverse composer, able to do a whole lot.
I don't have my CDs out here. Who does Last of the Mohicans and Braveheart? Because I absolutely love those.
James Horner.
Yes, Horner. That's who I thought it was, too. He would be another one that I would really enjoy his work.
I could see Horner. He's not as – his soundtracks usually match the films better, because he also did, I believe it was Avatar, if I'm remembering correctly. So I could see that. And I believe Hans Zimmer did the new Terminator film. But I guess that's a good one. The Marvel Studios have usually had different composers, but they've all been very good ones. And it's interesting because the only other franchise that John Williams hasn't exclusively owned that he composes for that I can think of off the top of my head is Harry Potter, because he did the first soundtrack to Harry Potter, but David, what's his name, took over later. Michael Giacchino is a big composer right now. He did the new Star Trek score to the new Star Trek film, and then also he also did Incredibles. That's what kind of put him on the map, that big band style. But I mean, those are all. There are some really fantastic composers out there right now that would all do a very good job. But in the same, Disney doesn't really have their go-to director or go-to composer. Even with Marvel, they're switching around. With different ones. But I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed with the Marvel films is that Disney has strayed from big, well-known directors for the Marvel movies. I mean, they're certainly talented directors, but they're not in the league of Jim Cameron or Steven Spielberg, where they usually want licensing rights and large paychecks and then shares of the toy revenue and all those big deals for the huge big name directors.
How crazy would it be to get Spielberg to do it, though?
Well, which is what I was coming to, because Spielberg's next film, I forgot the name, but the next film, he only has one other film on the plate. His most recent one is Lincoln, which is coming in theaters in a few weeks now. And he's working on one right now that comes out in 2014. So, I mean, one wonders. We know Steven Spielberg has been on record saying, I'd love to do a Star Wars film in the past. We know he's good friends with George Lucas. We also know that Kathleen Kennedy is a very good friend of Steven Spielberg. She produced all the Indiana Jones films. She produced a lot of other Spielberg films. Even her first one was E.T. back in the day, if I remember correctly. So they have a very tight relationship. So, and lastly, Spielberg also, and this is something the Forcecast speculated, you know, he actually worked on some of the early, what do you call those? Animatics. Yeah, early animatics for Revenge of the Sith. And helped and came in to do that. So I could certainly see Steven Spielberg. If they're going to get a big name director in, I would see Steven Spielberg. But yeah. I think one of, I don't really see the, I don't see J.J. Abrams, Joss Whedon, or anybody like that. They're busy with other projects. It's easy to look at IMDb and see who's available and just find, judging the next 2.5 years, who's not
see,
already
directing
a movie.
See, you named off two that I would love to see. I would just love to see their concepts of a Star Wars movie. I mean, J.J. Abrams, his movies seem to be kind of like a Quentin Tarantino effect.
Yeah.
You know, it's like jumping around and there's this crazy, it's almost like there's two or three stories being told at a time.
Yeah, but if I were to if I were a betting man, if I were a betting man, it's either going if it's a big name director, it's not going to be Joss Whedon, it's not going to be Jim Cameron, it's not going to be any of those other big names. It would be Spielberg, I think. If it's one of the other Marvel pool of directors or Disney pool of directors, I would say it might be Brad Bird, who's the director most recently of Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol, but he also has done a number of Pixar films, and he's the he was a chief executive at Pixar, I believe. But he's a big guy from Disney that they might pull. And the other one would be Joe Johnson, who we previously mentioned wanted to do the Boba Fett movie and has directed Captain America, is what he did. So those would be those would be my shameless predictions. Mark, you have any we want to give as far as casting or directors that you would love to see takes on?
Well, you know, if it was going to be an elder version of the cast, I would still love to see Mark Hamill come back as Luke. He's just, he'll always be my Luke. Dennis Quaid, I would love to see him play an older Han, you know.
Yeah, I see that. Or Nathan Fillion, maybe. He would be.
I was going to say, I want to see Nathan Fillion in there, but I actually kind of would like to see him playing, say, maybe Dash Rendar. But again, that's no EU is going to be here. But I would love to see him playing a character like that. Heck, you could even call him Malcolm, and I would be giddy on beyond giddy with that. Because hey, the Firefly class vessel does exist in the Star Wars universe. But again, that gets a little EU. But I thought, you know, originally, like, you know, Jon Favreau, Joss Whedon would be great directors. J.J. Abrams, those were the ones that come to my head right off the bat. You know, I'm terrible when it comes to names with most actors. This is where I lean on you, typically.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I mean, I would love to see, like, maybe, like, you know, Julia Roberts. You know, it's like some real big-name actors find their way in. You know, like, because
yeah.
I think, you know, Liam Neeson rocked Qui-Gon Jinn. And I remember when I heard Liam Neeson was going to be playing in Star Wars, I was like, whoa, you know, what's he going to be
You know, doing? And based on what we know from Episode 3 and how Yoda's talks to Obi-Wan about communing with him in the Force, and that in the novel and even in the screenplay, they were going to have a Liam Neeson cameo at the end as a Force ghost talking about becoming one with the Force. And I could certainly see if Lucas's treatment involved the concept of being one with the Force, I would see Liam Neeson coming back. He had a great, even though it was a small cameo, he had a great cameo in Dark Knight Rises. Which have you seen Dark Knight Rises yet, Mark?
I have yet to. I'm getting
close. You're in for a treat.
Could you just imagine though, if there was a whole section of this trilogy that took place in the netherworld of the Force, you could have you could have Obi-Wan back, you could have Qui-Gon, Yoda, you could have all the Jedi that have ever died. I mean, imagine like all of Beyond Shadows from the last Star Wars trilogy, or not trilogy, the Fate of the Jedi books and Legacy of the Force, where we had them going beyond and kind of going to a place where they could see everyone who had died in the Lake of Apparitions. I'm getting all Well of the World brain from New Jedi Order.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be just crazy, because I've always been like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if Yoda finally came to Luke as a vision, you know, because he never did, you know? I mean, it would be cool for Yoda just to show up in the EU side of things, just to be like, done well, you have. Time to rest is for you, you know? It'd just cool to see something like that. But imagine, though, the netherworld of the Force and chaos, because these are concepts that came from George's earliest scripts. You know, and there's stuff that really wasn't touched on at all, but fell off in deleted scenes in the prequels. I mean, you know, it would just fathom to be able to ponder that at all gets me excited, because that's something that has only shown up very rarely in our EU. I want to say the bios are the only time that we've actually gotten a in-character point of view from those places. Oh, man, that would just boggle my mind to see something like that. And then the opportunity to have all those characters from the old trilogies to come back would be kind of cool in and of itself.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's speculation will be endless, and I think the one thing that really jumps out that's come to from our conversation today, Mark, is you used the term a kind of reset of fandom, and it truly is. I think that's probably the best takeaway we can have, is that I really feel like my personal fandom and interest in the franchise has been reset. And it changes the Star Wars Report, it changes the website, it changes our relationship. We have something that, no matter what different directions, as I finish college and go into career life, and Bethany does the same, and as you know, people move forward and change in life, we do have this one thing in common, a common bond that will tie us together now more than ever with looking forward to these films. And I think that's probably the single most exciting thing that's going to happen, is just the fact that, my goodness, we're going to have a new Star Wars movie. I can't believe it.
My final thoughts on this is I never thought it would happen in my life. I really thought like it wouldn't happen in my kid's life. I really honestly thought that, yes, this kind of thing would happen when George was long since dead, and the time it took for pop culture to say, you know, we miss Star Wars. Yeah. And then have the reboot a la Battlestar Galactica. Because, sure, you know, I watch shows like Battlestar Galactica, I watch shows like Firefly and Serenity, and I'm like, you know, new things can be thought up all the time. And, you know, we watch things that are old become new again, and it's like, you know, Star Wars, it was ready to happen. And who did it? George himself. He's the one that came back and rebranded it. He gave us a prequel trilogy. And when we got bored of that, he said, hey, here's the Clone Wars. He kept shaking things up. And just when we thought, you know, he's going to retire, he's like, hey, you thought I couldn't shake it up some more? Guess what? Not only am I retiring, here you go, Disney. And I don't know. I mean, my jaw is on the floor, and I don't know how long it's going to be there. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, sometimes my jaw on the floor is just in awe. And in this case, it's equal awe, equal trepidation, and equal fear. I am just excited. I mean, there is an adrenaline factor to this. You know, I mean, I hear those people that say, you know, all the money I've spent in this, it's all a waste. And I implore you, please don't look at it like that. You know, did you enjoy it? Even a moment of everything you've been doing up until this moment? If you can answer that yes, it's not a waste. It's not going to go away. The story's not going to disappear. You know, think of it as an alternate universe. I know a lot of you out there, you disagree with me on this. You hate the concept of it. It doesn't mean that what was there is gone. It's standing on its own. It is finally its own living, breathing document. You know, if anything, it's got more weight behind it now than ever before. You know, breathe a little easy. Try to see the happy side. And enjoy the ride, because, you know, if you think it's going to end now, just wait till more details come out. You know, the sky is falling. The sky hasn't even begun.
Yeah, I know. I think for my final thoughts, I want to give a huge shout-out. We've got some reaction pieces coming to StarWarsReport.com. One's already up from writer Teresa, and it's very exciting, but I'll tell you what, she puts it probably better than I could. She was going to do a reaction piece, and it kind of ended up, she just did an open letter to George Lucas, because one thing that's really been lost in the shuffle, I think, really with, not necessarily by everyone, but I think certainly lost in the shuffle is the fact that George Lucas is now, he's truly retiring, and he will not be, his vision, his personal vision is no longer the vision for Star Wars. And I think that's exciting.
Not relevant, but, some would say.
Yeah, that's exciting in the new directions, but there is a loss, I think. Anyone who's enjoyed any of the Star Wars movies as a kid, I think we need to appreciate that this is a changing time, and George Lucas is now stepping back. And Teresa wrote an open letter to George Lucas that just titled, two words, thank you. And you guys can find it at StarWarsReport.com/thank you, George. I made a nice, easy-to-remember URL. But the last paragraph, she says, I'm very much – so this is, of course, to George Lucas. She says, I'm very much looking forward to the new places that Star Wars will go, and I thank you for giving that to us. Even though some may see you abandoning Star Wars, I do not. I see you giving us the ability to have more of it. And while we hate to see you go – I know that you will never truly be gone, fully gone. The mark that you've left on Star Wars will be seen forever. I wish you the best of luck in your retirement. Everyone deserves a chance to breathe. to breathe in their life and to pursue new things. You will be missed, but just remember this. When you wish upon a star, it makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come true. I have no doubt that this is especially true for you. Sincerely, Teresa Delgado. So for all of us that will forever cherish Star Wars, take this to heart. When you wish upon a Star Wars, the future for us is now wide open. Anything is possible. A new hope has arrived. Guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Star Wars Report. Thank you, Mark. It was. I'll tell you what. I just had a conversation for an hour and a half plus that I never, ever thought I would be able to have. So to be able to share that with you is truly something special. I really miss the fact that Bethany's not able to make it tonight. Yeah. But we will be coming back. Yeah, we will be coming back with more speculation. We'll be continuing, and the Star Wars Report's now no longer just covering the live-action series, The Old Republic, The Expanded Universe. We're covering the next Star Wars movie, and that's awesome. So, yeah. Folks, so
your
long...
official Star Wars sequel trilogy podcast, The Star Wars Report.
I know, exactly. So, guys, catch up with us on Facebook and Twitter, and email us your thoughts, starwarsreport@gmail.com. What do you think of the acquisition? But
and
I'll leave you
fans out there. You guys are worried that the world's coming to an end. Don't worry too hard. Go over to Star Wars Beyond the Films. Let us know what you're worrying about because, you know, hey, sure. Defender of the EU for a reason. We'll take up the cause.
They put a
positive spin on it. But that's something, you know, that for our podcast that, you know, it's going to be affecting us, and it's something that we're going to be watching very closely because
sure.
We're all about Beyond the Films, and right now Beyond the Films is in question.
I know. It's
exciting times one way or another.
It's exciting times. I'll tell you what. So, guys, remember, may the Force be with you. And many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.